politicians get focused on housing, it's like, you know, it's akin to fighting an active wildfire by planting more trees. You have to stop and get it under control first before you can think about planting more trees. And that's where we generally live and breathe, is how can we help people find a bright and immediate pathway off the streets?
Welcome to Conscious Curiosity SD, where successful San Diego leaders share their stories of leading beyond profit and are using the influence of business to powerfully change the companies and communities we all work and live in. I'm your host, Jeff Blanton, founder and CEO of Jailbreak Leadership. At Jailbreak Leadership, we unlock the power of AI by creating your AI strategy, streamline the technical and logistical implementation, and most importantly, guide the AI adoption of your team. We want to thank our collaborative community of business organizations, the Better Business Bureau, Conscious Capitalism, Cause San Diego, and Be Local. We're all focused on impacting our community of San Diego through the work they do as business leaders. Welcome to the show. Today's guest is tackling one of San Diego's biggest and most difficult challenges, homelessness, with a leadership style built around compassion, urgency, collaboration, and action. Drew Moser is the CEO of Lucky Duck Foundation, one of the most impactful organizations addressing homelessness in San Diego County. What makes the Lucky Duck Foundation especially interesting is their focus on real solutions, measurable impact, and bringing business, nonprofits, and community leaders together to drive change. Drew Moser, welcome to the Conscious Curiosity SD.
Thanks for having me, Jeff.
So today, Drew and I are going to explore what is the Lucky Duck Foundation, how are you approaching homelessness differently, what impact are you seeing, and of course, who are you? Why the heck did you sign up for this project?
It's a good question.
We need more Drews in the world. Well, you ready to rock and roll?
Let's do it.
For those who don't know, maybe give us a little snapshot. What is the Lucky Duck Foundation?
Our mission is to prevent and alleviate the suffering of homelessness throughout San Diego County. We know we're never going to solve it, but we think we can make a meaningful impact and help folks on the street find a much brighter pathway in life. And people usually ask me, well, where the heck does the name come from? Our co-founders, Pat and Stephanie Kilkenny, they started this 21 years ago. And with a last name like Kilkenny, you can probably guess there's some Irish heritage.
Little Irish going on in there.
Yep, so luck of the Irish. And then an affinity for the Oregon Ducks. Pat went to school up in Eugene and is a major benefactor, and he's actually their athletic director for several years. So Stephanie at one point said, well, we can't be the Kilkenny Foundation. That's boring. Let's be the Lucky Duck Foundation. And the mantra then is to share your luck. If you consider yourself to have had some good luck and good fortune in your life, share that luck with those in need. And to compel that, Pat and Stephanie personally match all donations up to $2 million per year. So, yeah, that's who we are and what we do. Pat and Stephanie, they're just the best, period. Anybody that doesn't know them, that's the best way I know how to describe them. And they've assembled a terrific board that just cares deeply, not about credit, but about results. And then within everything we've done and do, we prioritize youth and seniors.
Big hole there, especially the seniors. My understanding is the seniors are the number one group falling into homelessness today.
Unfortunately,
just can't keep up.
Largest and fastest growing segment. It's heartbreaking, and almost half of them are falling onto the streets for the very first time in their life in their latter years, almost purely for economic reasons. So we've done some prevention efforts, which we can get into if you want, but
yeah,
it's a highly vulnerable population. Much like youth, what youth need is much different than what seniors need, but we've learned or just felt speaking globally about this homelessness issue wasn't really moving the ball forward. With our precious limited philanthropic resources, we said we need to be a lot more strategic and targeted, and feel really good about some of the efforts we've been able to stand up on both the youth and senior side, and where we've been able, how we've been able to deploy our resources to help some young and aging people.
Well, I think that's key. I mean, it is a huge, huge problem, right, that we're throwing billions of dollars at and not seeing much happening. But if you want to go in and feel like you're doing something, you got to focus in somewhere, right, where you can actually have some impact.
Without a doubt. I mean, you look at, well, let's start there, the chronically homeless population. About half of them were homeless as kids. And so for that reason and many more, we said, well, let's prioritize youth. If we can catch kids early, as one partner organization says, if we can catch them while the cement is still wet, totally change the trajectory of their life. And it's a short-term fix, but it's also a long-term solve if we've done it correctly. And so connecting them to educational opportunities, employment opportunities, helping them move inside and just put them in a safe environment, breathe a little hope and life into them. And oftentimes that's all it takes, and then youth are on their way. And when you consider, you know, the cost of unsheltered homelessness is widely accepted as more than $40,000 per person per year, it adds up very quickly. Whereas if you can invest in youth, catch them young and help put them on a really positive path, it's beneficial for all parties, first and foremost for that young person. And then seniors, there's an extensive study done that basically, because it's almost purely economic circumstances that they're facing, an additional anywhere from $300 to $500 per month is what they need
to make the difference.
Yeah, to stay in their home, seniors that are very, very close to falling onto the streets. It's just too many of them are living on a fixed income and can't keep up with inflation and cost of housing. That if we can give them a few extra dollars towards their rent, that's enough to get them over, to keep them safely housed. And it's a program we started with the Padres, so has the name Seniors Safe at Home for that reason, kind of play on terms of the baseball term. But it's really about identifying seniors that are, you know, breaths away from falling onto the streets and stopping it before it even happens, so that they can stay in their home safely but not, you know, be faced with the perils and traumas of trying to survive on the streets in their latter years.
Yeah, I think that does something to people's models about who's homeless, because we tend to see the people that are on the corners that are drug addicted or acting out with mental issues, and it's like, oh, that's the homeless crowd, right? That's not the homeless crowd. Here's some folks that worked their whole lives, and now, like you say, due to economic situations, are finding themselves in the street. So it's like a whole different mindset about who's homeless in our community.
Yeah, this is an oversimplification, but one way to think about it is sort of three different categories: the have-nots, the can-nots, and the will-nots. And a lot of the folks we're able to help is the have-not population. The will-nots, you know, if the city of San Diego and some others would start by removing the bad actors, because unfortunately there's just some bad people out there that prey on those that are actually vulnerable, if they started by removing the bad actors, that would move things in the right direction. And then the can-nots, they require much higher level of service, whether it's behavior or mental health concerns or substance abuse and addiction, that, you know, the county and others, I think there's certainly room for improvement there to help that population. But again, that's an oversimplification, but that's one way that we sometimes try to dimension the homelessness situation in the county.
Right, right. I had experience once back a few years ago. I had a friend of mine ended up in jail, and I went to go visit her at the Orange County Jail on a Saturday morning. My first ever kind of visit like that. What I was taken back by was all the families that were there. So it's like, here's these little kids running around. It's like, well, I'm visiting Uncle. In fact, I was, are you doing both sides? Are you doing the women's and the guys? This is like the date. This is like the Saturday morning event, right? Go see the family members. My dad's here. My uncle's over here. My aunt's over here. So if you grow up in that, you know, being in jail is like, that's what we do. Kind of same thing. If you're growing up being in a homeless environment, this is what we do.
Yeah, Peter Sides, the late owner of the Padres, he was closely involved with Lucky Duck, and he would say, you know, we can't look at this like it's just numbers. I mean, that's somebody's sister or grandmother or aunt or uncle or, you know, brother out there that we need to go out and help them. They're our neighbors, and we need to help them find a brighter pathway.
Right, right. Yeah, it's definitely challenging. One of the things I'm always interested in with Lucky Duck, which I don't see in many other organizations, being coming out of the for-profit business side of things, that I'm always interested in, like, well, how can the four business guys get engaged? And I know that's one of the things with your Tuesday group and stuff like that, a lot of business owners. Maybe speak to that a little bit.
Yeah, well, so the foundation was started in 2005 and volunteer-led for a dozen or so years. In 2016, Peter Seidler, late owner of the Padres, saw homelessness getting out of hand. He said, what's going on here? I thought government had this handled. It's only getting worse. And he ultimately said, we being the private sector, we need to do something about this to compel action. So he organized a group of credible and effective business leaders, including our co-founders, Pat and Stephanie Kilkenny. And he said, we're going to meet every single Tuesday until we no longer have to. If the homeless aren't going to take a day off, we're not going to either. And so creative, they called themselves the Tuesday Group. But a weekly, basically, strategy session to determine what could the private sector do to influence change? And coupled with philanthropy, meaning the Lucky Duck Foundation, what could that sort of 1-2 punch accomplish? And so he brought in other credible business leaders and one by one started identifying opportunities to make a difference. And it was early on that they realized, hey, we're going to need a 501c3 to raise money to fund some of these various strategies we're talking about implementing. And that's when Pat and Stephanie said, well, you know, let's Lucky Duck can absolutely take homelessness head on. And so immediately thereafter, this was in 2017, the foundation purchased and installed several industrial tent structures that can go up within months to shelter hundreds of people. These structures provided shelter for over 500 people very, very quickly. And while that might seem obvious, it's not always obvious.
It wasn't happening, right?
Some of our electeds that, you know, some electeds get so tunnel vision on housing. And I think we can all agree housing is an ideal outcome, but it's extremely costly and it takes years, if not decades, to implement, to build, or even to acquire. And our group said, "That's if you guys want to go focus on housing, that's, you know, more power to you. But what about the poor souls suffering on the streets? Let's come up with a humane, cost-effective, and urgent strategy." It's kind of like sometimes I'll tell people when the politicians get focused on housing, it's like, you know, it's akin to fighting an active wildfire by planting more trees. You have to stop and get it under control first before you can think about planting more trees. And that's where we generally live and breathe, is how can we help people find a bright and immediate pathway off the streets? So these bridge shelters can go up within months for literally pennies on the dollar compared to the cost of adding housing. So that was the sort of like first foray into using business principles and business leaders to influence change and activate like tangible strategies that are actually going to help people. And, you know, ever since then, that's really been the thrust, is trying to apply business principles, a sense of urgency. And with every investment or strategy that we make, it's like, well, what's the ROI? We want to be able to quantify the effectiveness of each of those investments. So we've funded more than 25 different employment and job training programs, as an example, that have helped well over 2,000 individuals. And many of them are based on collaboration and leveraging strong suits. So I'll give you one example. We have a food rescue program that hires shelter residents at the Salvation Army. Feeding San Diego then provides a vehicle in all the different grocery stores and retail locations where food can be rescued. And then funding from Lucky Duck covers all the wages, plus the gas and the maintenance, the insurance, to make the whole program go. Well, here in about a week, that program will eclipse 1 million pounds of food that's rescued. Just about every person that's gone through the program has gone on to secure long-term employment and housing. And that's something that none of us could do on our own. But by those three entities coming together, leveraging our strong suits, we can rescue perfectly viable food, get it into the hands of those who are homeless and hungry or on the brink of homelessness, employ people and put them, use that as a kind of a stepping stone employment opportunity so they can move on and get something that's sustainable over the long term. And so those are just, I guess, a few examples. Really, just kind really of wordy answer for you.
No, but it's like the win-win-win scenario, right?
Exactly.
Applying good practices to go make that happen.
Exactly. And that's, I think, what our group of business leaders look to do with every investment and opportunity is, you know, how can we quickly help people? How can we do it with bang for the buck? And not just talk about it like some of the electeds or find the most expensive long-term strategy. How can we help people that are on the streets today find a brighter path?
Yeah, I love that. It's the whole idea of sense of urgency. I've done a lot of work around major projects and change and that kinds of good stuff. And quite honestly, I had a whole career at one point just kind of parachuting the companies up, turn around big projects. And people say, what's the number one reason why things fail? I go, lack of urgency.
Yeah.
We're talking about it. We're having meetings. We're spending money. But it's like there's no urgency actually to get it done. So, you know, once you generate like this must get done, there's some sort of drop dead date if we don't buy that, right? We're all going to implode or something.
Yeah.
It's amazing what humans can do. Otherwise, we just spend a lot of time sitting around talking about it.
100%. Dan Shea was on our board for a lot of years. And he has a saying, what you just described, of he would say all the time, well, we can't just talk this to death. And then we'd have others that say, you know, there's no perfect strategy in homelessness. Peter especially, he'd say, if something's 80% good in the business world, you act on it, you move forward. And so that's how we approach it, is he would use the term best in class. Let's only back best in class strategies with an urgent approach, and let the naysayers argue that 20% that's not perfect about it.
Right, right. So that's a challenge, right? So one of the keys to success is how do we collaborate, right? How do we bring these different groups together to bring different strengths or abilities to the program? But then that was what often leads to lots of conversation. So how do you guys work around that? How do you actually get this collaboration to work?
Well, a few different things. We've regularly hosted homeless symposiums. They actually are now called the Peter Seidler Way Symposiums on Homelessness. And we host probably anywhere from 4 to 8 of those per year. I think we're closing on over 60 or approaching 60 since pivoting to homelessness. And it's to get the key entities and leaders in the same room, service providers, electeds, government funders, other business leaders. And we learned early on, like, these entities aren't talking to each other. And we're coming at it going, how is that even possible? Aren't we all in this thing together and trying to row in the same direction? We can quickly
learn. Come on,
learn
Drew, what are you thinking here, man?
You can quickly learn it can be competitive and siloed, which just makes us pull our hair out. And so simply getting people in the same room focused on a topic in and of itself can create some really solid collaborations and progress. So we'll do that pretty frequently. And, you know, and so then that's led to one of our more recent efforts, which is teaming up with the Prebis Foundation to create something that we're calling United for Youth. It's a $5 million foster youth homeless prevention effort. And it's also done in partnership with the Copley Foundation. But what started as basically a symposium around foster youth, and because they have a much higher propensity for falling onto the streets, led to the creation of this $5 million investment, where over the next 2 years, we expect that a minimum of 500 youth, current and former foster youth, will connect to employment, housing, and mentorship. And that will be done in partnership with close to 40 different organizations that are doing at least a component of the employment, housing, or mentorship. I guess in the most simplistic form, getting the right people in the room, huddled around a topic, and having a hearty discussion that's totally rooted in fact, and, you know, not being afraid to call out some
stories,
bad actors.
Yeah.
And then also coming to the table with resources that will get people's attention as well. But again, you know, with that United for Youth effort, we said this is not a competitive process. We want you teaming up with your proposals with other organizations. So we had two CEOs of essentially competing organizations co-present for how they would team up and work together. And it was a bit of a challenging process to get the buy-in for that, but ultimately we're there. And the partnerships that exist, the trust that's been established, and this new system that there's in theory no wrong door for some of these current former foster youth, I think is really strong. And the next several months, you know, we look forward to telling some of those individual success stories and the sort of aggregate result of this effort. So that's, I think, the symposiums, I think, are a key driver and all that. And then we also, you know, some would argue how effective it is, but we have something called Shamrocks and Shipwrecks. It's a public scorecard meant to grade elected officials and their approach to homelessness.
Don't be measuring what we're doing over here, Drew. That's not fair. We got a good heart. Don't be measuring.
Yeah. Well, basically, good actions by elected officials get shamrocks. Inaction, ineffectiveness, decisions that drive the region backwards, that gets shipwrecks. And we're, you know, our group said at the beginning, we don't care who's a Democrat, who's a Republican. We're going to take action based on the facts. And if the politicians are taking meaningful steps forward, we'll be the first to pat them on the back and give them all the credit. Because so much of this comes down to political will. However, if the effort's not there, it's like John Wooden says, the pat on the back might be lower and harder. And that's where maybe a shipwreck comes in, and we'll put it out to the media. We'll put it out to our followers on email and social media as a way to say, like, look, this was the wrong decision or a boneheaded decision that's moving the region backwards. But then I think importantly, it comes with a long list of things Lucky Duck is doing or prepared to do to either turn the shipwreck into a shamrock or to generally speed up the elected's approach in homelessness across the county. So that's, you know, again, so much of this comes down to political will, and we're not trying to be critics. We're trying to be catalysts and come to the table with our own resources to bear to, again, speed up the local government's approach around homelessness.
It's all about action.
Absolutely.
Get some things going here. We can't just be sitting around talking. If it's not working, then let's figure out. Maybe we need to pull the plug or do something different, but let's not just keep doing the same thing over and over again, thinking some sort of result, right?
Absolutely.
It's like most recently the point in time count was just done, and they came back and said, oh, man, things are looking really great, right? And then Karen, my wife, who runs Shoreline Community Services, and we have a drop-in center, she goes, that may be the point and count numbers, but here's my numbers, right? Things are up from last year, not down.
Yep.
So, yeah.
Especially when you – yeah, the point in time count, that's just one day
snapshot
in the life.
And it's, really, and it's a bizarre thing anyway. It's going at 4 in the morning and go wandering around and doing like a belly button count. So it's kind of an interesting exercise.
Well, and then you look at some of the – if you dive into some of the data around that, it's like a lot of this stuff is self-reported. You can look at like substance abuse or addiction.
Right.
And the point in time count will give you a number. Well, that's based on people volunteering that information at 4 in the morning when they're woken up by a stranger.
Right.
I don't know what information you're going to volunteer to a stranger at 4 in the morning, but I know I'm not even going to volunteer a whole lot. So it's – and even the Regional Task Force on Homelessness, who has pretty solid leadership, they acknowledge it's far from perfect methodology. Yeah. What you really need to look at is how many people touch the system over the course of a year, and then a few other factors. But, yeah, there's – then the other thing you got to look out for is how the politicians will use the point-in-time count data to
– yeah, look at the fine job I'm doing over here. Yeah.
Yeah.
So if you were king for the day – Drew, you're living it. What would you do? What are some of the major things that you just go, man, this just needs to be go away or be fixed or something?
Well, there's got to be meaningfully more immediately available beds for people to move into. First and foremost, whether it's shelter or whether it's detox beds. And you look at there's only like a little over 100 detox beds in the entire county that accept Medi-Cal. Yet there's almost a million county residents on Medi-Cal insurance. So when you're looking at a homeless individual that's dealing with substance abuse or addiction, there's virtually no detox beds available.
Nowhere to go.
And so that needs to be upped considerably, as do shelter beds across the region. Then when you look at the number of funding, different government funding sources and all the different requirements that come with that funding, it's this like incredibly tangled web of funding sources where it's kind of have different cities and service providers scurrying around every which way. It's kind of like another John Wooden quote is, don't mistake activity for achievement. There's a lot of activity across the county. Is it coordinated or is it, you know, unified nearly to the level it could be? Absolutely not. So I think understanding that tangled web of funding and pretty significantly simplifying it so that there can be one or a much smaller number of entities that are holding all of these entities accountable, I think that would then drive stronger results. So those are a few of the
things. Just created this huge maze, right, of how it all works.
Yeah.
Navigating totally is like almost impossible.
Yeah.
I recently got engaged. Actually, we do it at your facility around the whole mental illness and trying to get folks off the street that don't realize they're mentally ill, but you know they need to get off the street, and options the family members not have. And every time I go to that meeting, it's like, oh, here's this whole new thing over here, right? Some SB something or other with some numbers on. It's like, man, we got a lot of things going on, but which one's working and which one actually, that's a great idea, but it actually doesn't work the way it's described. And it just goes on and on and on.
Yeah.
It's hard to even get ahead of it to understand it.
Yeah, without a doubt. There's, I mean, a whole bunch of different strategies, and to your point, acronyms out there, and you know, government agencies or politicians saying, well, we should do this, we should do that, and that's all fine. But, again, it's got to be pretty significantly simplified, almost going back to that those three buckets we talked about earlier is the have-nots, can-nots, will-not. Having a strategy sort for each of those, I think, would meaningfully move the ball forward or start to see some progress. And then you look at, like, prevention. That's a pretty cost-effective strategy that will keep people from coming, even entering the system. Because once you fall on the streets, it's really challenging to overcome that. So if we can keep people housed, especially seniors, so then it's a matter of, like, not asking the governor or whomever for new money, but just saying, hey, how about we reallocate existing expenditures, you know, money that's going towards something that isn't exactly effective, let's reallocate some of that towards prevention or towards adding immediately available beds. Those are some of the things I think we would do if we were king.
maybe this afternoon you'll get the call. We've been waiting for someone to step into this role. Here you go. I would like to talk about a specific project that I've been directly and kind of indirectly involved in, which is, as I mentioned earlier, my wife runs the Shoreline Community Services. She's been on the show, so you can go check that out. But as part of that, we have a social enterprise. We're looking to hire like 6 people that are unhoused in our community. They get about 20 hours of work a week, which is like the business district cleaning up trash, emptying the trash cans, working at various churches and whatnot. And alongside that, we have case managers that are there to help support what are the things we need to get you up the street. Similar to what you were talking about, at the end of it all, it's like, okay, you got a job or you're going to school or you got reunited or whatever, but you're able to move on in life. That's the goal. All those folks are still unhoused that are working in this. So imagine you're like sleeping on the beach or sleeping on the cement somewhere. You got to get up at 6:30 in the morning and come join Jeff to go empty trash for the next 3 hours on a daily basis. Not easy. So there was a grand plan to put small houses on the property. 6 of them to line up specifically with our community care crew. And we started that project, what, like 3 years ago or something? There was the idea where the county said, hey, we got these tiny homes, a little 8x8. It's a housing for somebody. Place to put your head, put your stuff, right, so you can go out and do your work. Here we are, 2.5 years later, still waiting for this thing to happen because it got caught up in the city planning process. I don't know if that's the norm or what, but it's like, how frustrating is that?
Well, it's incredibly frustrating, first of all. It was over 2 years ago, we were talking to Karen about this strategy, and I mean, the long and short of it is pallet homes on church-owned property where the churches agree, yes, we'll gladly be a part of, we'll be a helping hand here and be a collaborative partner. And these pallet homes would literally be constructed by the homeless individuals.
Yeah, it's like a Lego project.
That are going to live in them. They're out cleaning up the communities, business fronts, the streets, etc., because they want to put homelessness behind them. There's really one roadblock and one roadblock only, and that's the city of San Diego. So we're trying to be patient, and I know Karen's been the tip of the spear on this thing. But that is, to me, it's a microcosm of trying to get things done with local government. These pallet homes could have been stood up easily 2 years ago.
Yes.
And, again, you got the church right there that's going to open its doors for bathroom and kitchen and the whole deal. These are a place for people to come in, sleep at night, lock their door, and start the process of putting homelessness behind them. And still to this day, those homes are not activated because of some permitting issues. Again, that's what makes this so frustrating, yet so could be much more quickly. Is this the political will, the ability to just come in and say, yeah, no, we're not. For the city or whatever the governmental entity is, come in and say, yeah, we're done with folks sleeping on the streets. If this church and this great organization, Shoreline Community Services, wants to help them, absolutely, go for it.
And what can we do
yeah.
to make it happen yes. versus the opposite of, like, what can we do to not make it happen?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just kind of insane. We're getting there, though. We're getting close. We're actually starting construction, so things are actually moving forward after 2.5 years of waiting.
God bless Karen for staying the course, as it should not be nearly this tortured.
She told the board, if I come up with another harebrained idea like this, don't let me do it. Which is kind of sad. That's not what you want people like Karen being like, I'm so frustrated I want to do this again. Yeah. I mean, that's the wrong message.
It absolutely is. It's, yeah. So there's, and on a very, like, you know, microeconomic scale, I'll call it, that's one thing we would do if we were king.
Yeah.
Get the some of the bureaucrats out of the way that really, at the end of the day, all they know how to say is no. Get them out of the way so that the angels of the earth, like you and Karen, can make things happen. And that's one reason Lucky Duck's so proud to support you guys is it's totally practical. It's urgent. It's cost effective. It's helping people find a brighter path. It gets them employment right away. But then you're not stopping there. You're saying, let's put a roof over their head. And it would be a totally turnkey model were it not for local government.
And what's interesting, I mean, the community was informed. You think, okay, there'll be some pushback from the community, not in my neighborhood. That was not the case. So I know those things you kind of thought would be the problem weren't the problem.
Well, I think that's the beauty of what you all have created, too, is it's – I don't think it's just one church. It's like seven down there in Pacific Beach that have come together and basically linked arms and said, yeah, this is what we're going to do to help homelessness in the Pacific Beach area. And so they provide meals and open up their doors and make the parking lot available for the pallet homes. It's truly a collaborative approach that has one pretty significant roadblock at the time at this moment in time. And again, God bless you guys for staying the course despite these just harebrained roadblocks.
But it's not even just the church; it's the local town community crew. It's the police. I mean, everyone's been involved in getting this community up and running. So it's been really positive from a community development perspective.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah,
Karen's done an amazing job with that. So, Drew, how the hell did you get this job? You got kind of a sports background, if I understand correctly, and here you are. So how did this come to be?
Well, I was working at the Hall of Champions in the San Diego Sports Association, and I spent about 8 or 9 years there, the last half of which I got to lead the organization and work for some really credible business people in town. And at the same time, Peter and Dan and Pat and Stephanie and others decided to focus on homelessness. And I knew all of them, and I said basically like, hey, I can't write checks like you guys can yet. It's my goal to someday. But if I can give you what time and what little talent I have to help the cause, I'm happy to. So I just started volunteering with them to learn how they were going about it, how they were putting pressure on electeds, how they were getting things done, and figure out what I could do to support that effort. And as their efforts expanded, they needed somebody to kind of try to keep things moving forward and organize things and try to help them get to the next level. So I joined them, a little bit of leap of faith, just going, I came down here to coach basketball at the University of San Diego. So I spent 3 years there before going to the Hall of Champions in the Sports Association.
That's your thing is basketball?
Yeah. Yeah. When you boil it all down, I'm just a dumb jock. So I was like, man, okay, I could stay in the sports stuff and be comfortable and it was fun. But there was, I just had a desire to take on a new challenge, and I just had so much respect and admiration for what Lucky Duck was doing and how they were going about it that I thought, man, if I could help support that effort, that's going to have a pretty big impact on the community. So this is formally joined them. It would have been in 2019 as their very first employee, and never in my wildest dreams thought I'd be in this line of work. It's just, grace of God, and it's been very fulfilling and gratifying. And but I have a business degree and an MBA. I always thought I'd go out in the corporate world. So it's interesting because this is like trying to apply business principles to this massive issue of homelessness. It's this, and everything we do is so collaborative and like team oriented, much like partnering with you and Karen and Shoreline, that it's this cool sort of melding of, my education and love for basketball and team sports and business principles to just try to go out and help people in need. So certainly not by design's grace of God.
It's not what you're thinking about when you were like graduating from high school or something. I think I'll be running a nonprofit in a homeless space someday.
Not at all.
Are you originally a San Diego guy or are you from elsewhere?
No, I grew up in Spokane, Washington.
Okay.
And so
saw the light came to San Diego.
Well, I went to the University of Redlands and played basketball and majored in business there. And I thought I'd gone and died to heaven when it was, you know, sunny and 70 degrees in January in Redlands. And then what had happened is USD had hired Bill Greer from Gonzaga in Spokane. And I never thought I wanted to get in coaching, but then I sort of fell into it. And I thought, man, if I could coach at the Division I level, that'd be a great opportunity. So that's what brought me to town almost 20 years ago. And it's San Diego's an amazing place, and I love Spokane, love where I grew up. I kid with all my friends that it's God's country. But San Diego's incredible. It's an awesome community, and very, very fortunate to get to live here.
That's what I love. We moved down here from Orange County, I guess coming up on 10 years ago now, and I don't know, when we both came here, it felt like there was some reason to be here, not just, a different location and find a job or whatever. But it was like, it seemed like there was some impact we were supposed to be having. So, I don't know, I just think it's a really awesome community.
Absolutely.
I got my Moses story. I was here 40 years ago, couldn't find a job, went up to L.A., and then 40 years later, moved it down. So I'm like going, now I'm at the promised land. I'm like, I'm like Moses, took 40 years to get here.
There you go.
It was a very slow roll, but here I am. I finally made it. What are you optimistic about? We're kind of talking about some of the challenges here in the community. What are you excited about?
I'm excited about our United for Youth effort. To build on that, we're really leaning in on what we can do around youth homelessness. And we've done some things to try to understand the level of government spending across the region, how that corresponds to youth and what opportunities might exist there. And that, I think, is also going to be, or it already is, a very collaborative approach with local government across the county on where they're spending money, what it's going towards, how effective it is. Again, could we reallocate some of that annual expenditure? So I'm optimistic about that and how it merges with our efforts around youth and around seniors, especially with, again, this United for Youth effort and some of the success stories that we see out of it. It's inspiring. It's heartbreaking with what you see these kids are dealing with and have to overcome, but then it's inspiring with you see when they turn a corner and they do it through this collaborative approach of these organizations that are working together with funding from Lucky Duck and Prebis and Copley. So I'm really optimistic about that collaborative approach, the prioritization around youth, and the potential opportunity to get local governments more effectively united or unified on this approach. So broadly, that's I guess what I'm excited about.
Well, I love the idea how you guys are focusing on the youth, because we want to get ahead of this thing. So far, it just seems like we're chasing it and throwing more money at it, and the problem just seems to be getting bigger and worse, and rather than actually fixing it. But I think if we get to the youth side of things, actually, here's this generation. This generation doesn't experience homelessness because we actually fixed something earlier on. That would be phenomenal.
Without a doubt.
That would be phenomenal. Because one of the things I did learn working with the community care crew, once you get into homelessness, man, it is really hard to get out of that hole.
Yep.
That is a big, big challenge. Everybody's, oh, just strap it on, go make it happen. Doesn't look like that. There's lots of things going against you.
Yeah, that's why we tried it through, like community care crew and others, provide employment opportunities, but continually push on the need for more immediately available beds, that at a minimum people can move inside and start that process of finding a more long-term pathway off the streets. And when you look at, like, across the, I think it's the city of San Diego right now, for every 10 requests for shelter, less than one gets placed.
Right.
I mean, it's like, it's heartbreaking. And then you got the city taking steps to reduce capacity at some of these sites, or at least talking about it. It's heartbreaking. And so that's where we're here to try to be like, no, you can't close shelters. First of all, you need to be opening them.
Yeah, and can be going the other way. Yeah.
Yep. And we're here to provide our resources under the right circumstances to add those pathways off the streets.
Well, I love the work that you're doing. I always like to wrap up with what's the one big idea? If no one remembered anything out of our conversation, what would you like them to remember, Drew?
I always go back to our co-founders that they match all donations up to $2 million per year. So when people think about being philanthropic, basically your gift is doubled through Lucky Duck. And they don't do that for credit. They're so humble and self-deprecating, but sincerely care. that it's just, it's a great group of people. It's a, it's an awesome donor base, and it's really, to me, a credit to Pat and Stephanie for their leading by example. That's what I hope people remember, and that, you know, I think it's can be easy to look out there and go, well, there's nothing I can do to address homelessness. But if people go on our website and see all the different things that we do and all the different ways they can plug in, I like to think there's an opportunity for everybody to own their small piece of the puzzle. So that's probably too wordy of an answer, but that's what I'd hope people would take away.
Well, it actually leads me to, this is a business podcast. That's our focus, is for-profit companies. So best way to get checked in with Lucky Duck, if you were interested, how was that? Through the website? Lucky Duck, reach out to you?
Yep, luckyduckfoundation.org. If they email staff at luckyduckfoundation.org, we get those
emails. You'll put them to work.
Yeah,
that's absolutely. Not a problem.
Awesome.
Absolutely. Well, Drew, I appreciate you coming to the studio today and sharing all your great wisdom and insights and all the fantastic work you guys are doing and the work you're doing at the foundation there.
Well, thanks very much for having me.
Well, that's our show for today. And if you enjoyed it, please subscribe, comment, and most importantly, share the podcast with a friend. Again, special thanks to our collaborative community of San Diego business organizations, the Better Business Bureau, Conscious Capitalism, Be Local, and Cause San Diego. We're all using the influence of business to positively impact our very own community of San Diego. I'm Jeff Blanton from Jailbreak Leadership saying, until next time, go to what you do. Go to what you do best, or we're all counting on you.